Shotgun formation. Snap to Murray. Pressure coming. Murray in trouble. Launches it up in the air. Christian Kirk is there. He's got it to 10 and down to the 5. That looked like the play from last week. It'll be first and goal. Kyler Murray, probably the only quarterback again who could escape that kind of pressure, backpedal, and then put enough on that ball to hit Kirk downfield.
What a play by Kyler Murray right there. Cover zero.
Yeah, 4th and 5, 35-yard pickup in a crucial spot to keep a drive going. Ended in a field goal anyway, but as Matt Prater told us yesterday, much rather kick a 27-yarder as opposed to a 59-yarder when you need those points, mm-hmm. and that's what happened. But another spectacular play, and I heard Burns and Gambo talking about this yesterday, and it's true. When you look at two games, and it's a small sample, and there's 15 games left to go, but through 2 weeks, I don't think any single player in the NFL has provided more highlight reel-type plays than Kyler Murray has.
No.
Lamar Jackson is up there. Patrick Mahomes will always be near the top of that list, but I don't think anybody's surpassed Murray.
Okay, Lamar Jackson did a sideways flip into the end zone, did not stick the landing, landed on his hip, woke up, said his hip was sore, and John Harbaugh said, yeah, that didn't surprise me. So that's the Lamar Jackson highlight I have in my head.
But hold on. Can we focus on that for a second?
Okay.
One of the storylines coming out of week two is the application of these taunting rules in the NFL.
Okay.
And there's all these super cuts of these terrible calls going against players for taunting.
Yeah. Couldn't have seen that coming.
I like Lamar Jackson, mm-hmm. but isn't running into the end zone and realizing that there's nobody around you and doing a flip into the end zone that's totally unnecessary the very definition of taunting?
Well, yes. And it's,
how stupid is it? Because if you get hurt doing, I mean, anything can happen when you're flipping your body and you're not used to doing it. If he gets hurt, the Ravens are done.
Lamar Jackson is one of my favorite football players on the planet, but that was idiotic what he did. First of all, you hurt yourself. You've just completely sunk your team.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, John Harbaugh at that time was screaming for a two-point conversion, and your quarterback is off celebrating. And now he's getting up, and he's trying. Okay, that's not the focus you need to have, but whatever. That might be a nitpick on my behalf. But you're right about that. And these taunting penalties, dude, I'm telling you, I saw this coming a mile away. This, fans want to see that stuff. Mike Evans ran backwards into the end zone to celebrate a touchdown and got flagged for
it. But how is that different from what Jackson did?
Nothing. It's not different. It's not different. It's all stupid is what it is.
I agree, and I apologize for when that rule was announced. I said maybe it's probably a necessary step. I was totally wrong. It's been totally botched by the league.
Okay, so Lamar Jackson, to me, is a great, fun player to watch. Can't take my eyes off him, but in terms of highlight reel stuff,
mm-hmm.
Kyler Murray, you can rattle him off right now. The things that he has done this season, you got 5 or 6 plays that are legitimate highlight reel stuff.
And is that because of his sort of better ability to throw?
Yes. Yes.
Makes him overall more exciting.
Yes. That it's the whole package.
Yep.
And it's the fact that he's just such a mighty mouse. It's something that people just have not seen. And I'm telling you, he can be to football what Steph Curry and Steve Nash were to the NBA. Inspirations to smaller dudes that you do not need to be 6'2" to play quarterback in the NFL or in college. You just got to want it.
Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach, on with Wolf and Luke yesterday. His thoughts on how Kyler's playing.
He's really seeing it well. I think that'd be the best way I can put it. The game slowed down for him. He's getting the ball to the right place. He's making some great checks. Still, you know, being uber aggressive at times when we could probably check it down and take care of the football a little bit better. But you walk that fine line. You want to play aggressively. You want to be in attack mode, but you also want to be smart.
Athleticism aside, one of the highlights for me for Kyler Murray in the first 2 weeks is in each game, there's been instances where he comes to the line, he spots something, he identifies something, changes the play, and it's led to great things for the Cardinals. The national media talking about Kyler Murray's early season performance, including, I mean, the poster boy for the national media, Stephen A. Smith, right?
Shockingly, I'm going to tell you Kyler Murray. And I'm fully aware of the greatness of Russell Wilson. He's a future Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned. He's carried the Seahawks franchise on his back. I love me some Russell Wilson. He is special.
Yeah.
But Kyler Murray, ladies and gentlemen, he's putting everybody on notice. He's 24 years old. This brother already has passed for nearly 700 yards in 2 games this season. 7 touchdowns, just 3 interceptions. He's completing over 73% of his passes. And I'm looking at this dude just make things happen. He's got an arm. When you talk about a guy that can move in and out of the pocket, extend plays, and create opportunities for his offense, in terms of running with the football, there's nobody better than him other than Lamar Jackson. Now, Russell Wilson can move the chains, and Russell Wilson can extend plays, but the threat that Kyler Murray is at running the football, he's got weapons, but he himself is a very, very lethal weapon.
Dave Pasch, did you see his tweet last night? Quote, in New York City, watching the Monday night football game at a restaurant, Cardinals highlights come on TV. Everyone starts talking about Kyler. I decide to jump in with an opinion. I'm told I don't know what I'm talking about. Very similar to Twitter. So he's in New York City, and Kyler Murray is being talked about. Yeah, I'm telling you, he's right on the cusp of gigantic things.
He also tweeted out a highlight of the Rondale Moore play and said, this was unique, and I responded to him, and I said, Dave, I lived in New York until I was 7, so I feel compelled to tell you, you don't know what you're talking about.
I wonder what he's doing in New York City. Maybe just vacation.
Maybe.
He doesn't vacation.
I know, but there's
he
no
just
like
works.
There's no college football there.
Maybe he's doing meetings.
How dare you
NBA calls.
Impugn the Rutgers be. Scarlet Knights.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. D-backs Daily. Brought to you by America Roofing, Arizona's number one roofer online at AmericaRoofingCo.com. For a free estimate or 10% off any roof repair, that's AmericaRoofingCo.com.
Yeah, D-backs welcoming the Braves to town. Four-game series started last night at Chase Field, and it was the Braves who drew first blood, this in the third inning. Thanks to Austin
There's
Riley.
There's a hit. And it'll plug the gap and score a couple. Another double for Riley. And it's 2-0 Atlanta as both Freeman and Albies comes in to score.
Yeah, Greg Schulte on the call on the D-backs radio network. D-backs answered in the bottom half of the inning off the bat of Ketel Marte.
There's the 0-2 now to Marte. And a line drive into right. That's down. It's a hit. He'll score one. As Vargas comes in, Rojas will stop at third on another double by Marte, and it's a 2-1 ball game. Now the ball gets away, and save it to pipe it out at third. So Rojas came in to score to tie the ball game, but they get Marte trying to go to third base. And the Diamondbacks have tied it here with a two spot in the third inning.
2-2 at that point. Dalton Varsho would later score on a Huskar Ynoa wild pitch to make it 3-2. To the fifth inning. Man, Freddie Freeman, just a machine, doing it again to start a big inning for the Braves.
There's a line drive, and that's a fair ball into the right field corner. That'll score Soler, and into second base, standing up with a double, is Freddie Freeman. This game is tied at 3. Boy, he's a good hitter.
Wouldn't be tied very long. Next batter, Ozzie Albies, he singled to right. That scored Freeman. The next batter, Austin Riley, again doubled, knocked in Albies. And then Adam Duvall came to the plate.
There's a fly ball, hit a mile by Duvall. That's number 37. RBI's 106-107. And it's a five-run Atlanta fifth inning and a 7-3 lead.
Yeah, it got out of control at that point. 9-3 by the end of the frame. That home run by Duvall, by the way, Vic, 483 feet. The Ooh. Second longest home run by a Braves player in the last 15 years.
Wow.
So when Greg Schulte says he hit it a mile, he hit it a mile. There was runs on both sides the rest of the way, but the Braves win it 11-4.
Did anybody final. Notice that Max Scherzer and Robbie Ray might be Cy Young Award winners?
No, really?
you ever see that?
After Trevor Bauer won it last year?
Yeah. And let's not count out Yusmeiro Petit.
Yeah.
Braves and Diamondbacks continue their series tonight out at Chase Field. There you go. There's D-backs Daily coming up. It has been a rough start for Pac-12 football. We'll talk about it next with John Wilner from the Mercury News. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You've been listening to D-backs Daily, brought to you by America Roofing, Arizona's number one roofer, online at AmericaRoofingCo.com. For a free estimate or 10% off any roof repair, that's AmericaRoofingCo.com. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata. Bickley and Murata Mornings. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Yeah, the Arizona State Sun Devils coming off an ugly performance in Provo, Utah on Saturday. They will open up their home schedule, or their Pac-12 schedule, I should say, at home against Colorado on Saturday. And here to talk some Pac-12 football with us from the Mercury News, John Wilner, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
Good. What are some of the adjectives you can use to describe what you saw from Arizona State Saturday night? Because I actually at one point looked up on thesaurus.com synonyms for sloppy because I was running out of ways to describe it.
Yeah, boy, that was something else. I can't remember the last time I saw 16 penalties. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they were actually called for 20, but four of them were declined by BYU. Okay, so you got 16 or 20 penalties and four turnovers. I mean, that has got to be close to a Pac-12 record. I think part of it is who they played the first 2 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be sharp to beat UNLV in Southern Utah by multiple touchdowns, right? I mean, that's part of the risk you take with a schedule like that, where you start with two cream puffs and then you've got a real tough third game. I don't know to what degree the NCAA investigation is a distraction for the coaching staff, or to what degree the absence of those three position coaches is playing in the daily teaching and preparation. But those are certainly questions that I think ASU fans, it's worth asking.
There's no doubt. When you hear ASU's program claim there are no distractions, but to me that would be ludicrous. You can almost hear how deflated Herm Edwards sounds at times, and the play speaks for itself. When you've got an experienced team with that much experience, you don't expect these kind of mental errors. You don't expect teams not to be able to deal with crowd noise in Provo. To an outsider, I think it would be very fair to assume that, wouldn't it, that this is taking a toll?
I mean, you'd have to think so, and at least at Herm's level, right? I don't know about Antonio Pierce, and the position coaches, probably not, but you'd have to think that Herm is not, necessarily completely focused. He said, it starts with me, the problem starts with me. He is absolutely right about that. But the problem is that, you can't really just snap your fingers and all of a sudden you're a much more disciplined team from 1 week to the next in terms of penalties, right? That's a tougher, that takes longer to kind of get that out of your system and to get back to the fundamentals and executing the fundamentals every play and doing it in practice. So I think they'll beat Colorado if they could just get a safety, but longer term, you do have to wonder, are they going to be able to, I still think they have the talent to win the South, but you got to match that with execution. And there's three very good teams in that division, I think, and whether they can execute enough week to week, not just have it be, here and there, is what we're going to have to watch for.
John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News covers the Pac-12. He's our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. From Tempe to Tucson, look, we knew Arizona was not going to be good. Look, we knew they weren't going to be good under Jed Fish, who's done a lot of good things, and he's kind of excited the fan base down there, but to lose to a Big Sky team in your state that Arizona had hammered them every year by ridiculous score margins, how impactful is that? How damaging is that loss, John, to what Jed Fish is trying to do in Tucson?
I think that it's a significant setback. They were up, what, two touchdowns early, too. I mean, that game should have been over at halftime. Right, and then you combine it with basically just a face plant against San Diego State, and you're an Arizona fan who's gone to these first two games of this new era, and you're going to be wondering, well, I'm not going back, right? Maybe till next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think certainly not only is the honeymoon over for Fish, but he's into the daily grind of marriage at this point.
One of the fascinating things, and I don't know if this is going to end well for the Pac-12, I look at ASU, and the culture in Arizona. This is a pro sports town, and there's only so much interest generated. There's a lot of soft markets, if you will, in the Pac-12. This name, image, likeness thing, it's going to really work in markets like Tuscaloosa and Gainesville. Schools like that are going to generate a lot of money to attract a lot of kids. Do you worry that the NIL is going to become an issue in the Pac-12 that is a conference full of soft markets?
I certainly think that's possible. But, you know, you can identify some places where it'll work. Like, you know, the NIL market for Arizona basketball in Tucson is probably strong.
Yeah.
Oregon football in Eugene is probably strong. Salt Lake City, probably strong. The NIL is going to be very localized, right? It's up to the schools to help the athletes maximize the opportunities. And it could be social media. I mean, it could be with a bigger company, you know, just picking, you know, Johnny Juzang, UCLA star basketball player, right? I mean, there is probably demand for him, promotional and endorsement demand for him in Los Angeles. USC starting quarterback. I mean, Jackson Dart, right? Four touchdowns, freshman. You know, the King Slovis has a deal. So I think here and there, even in the big cities, there's going to be some opportunity. Jaden Daniels has at least two and maybe three NIL deals going now, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
But it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to, you know, be trickled down, you know, to the level of offensive linemen in Phoenix and L.A., and it probably will trickle down to that level, you know, in a Tuscaloosa or a Columbus.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
John Wilner, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. It's been a rough start for the Pac-12. You got one undefeated team. Oregon, their best performance came against their best opponent in Ohio State. They're 3-0, and they're ranked third. But are you convinced that Oregon is that strong at this point, John?
I mean, to the extent that you can know anything through 3 weeks, I think probably. And you look, and, you know, Oklahoma hasn't looked great, right?
No.
I mean, Ohio State was up on Tulane by one touchdown late in the game. I mean, certainly Florida's tough opponent, but Alabama went to the wire, right? So I'm not sure that anybody, maybe aside from Alabama, I'm not sure anybody looks like a playoff team any more so than the Ducks do. I think that was a terrific performance in Columbus. So, you know, through 3 weeks, they're in as good a shape as anybody, right? And they can lose. They've got a cushion now. They can lose a game in the Pac-12 and still make the playoff. It's the opposite of what happened to them in 2019. They lost that opener to Auburn, and then once they lost to ASU, they were out. Now they can lose a game. It's the equivalent to that ASU loss, and they're still okay.
Yeah.
A lot of institutional arrogance at USC, another one of those programs that's not quite as good right now as they think they are. Texas is probably in that boat. In your opinion, John, if you ran that university, who would you hire? Who would you give the keys to that program to?
Boy, that's a great question. I would probably have, I would probably put James Franklin would certainly be on my short list. I think he connects very well to players. You know, you got to have somebody who connects with the players and is, you know, a likable personality in L.A., right? I don't know. I think Bill O'Brien is a hell of a coach.
Oh, yeah.
He did an incredible job at Penn State cleaning up the Paterno mess. I would certainly give him some strong consideration. But they have got to hire, I think, somebody who's been head coach before. They can't, you know, you go with an assistant coach, and Arizona did this with Jed Fish, right? There is an added level of risk if you are hiring somebody who's never been a head coach before. USC cannot take that risk. It's got to be, I think, Eric Bieniemy, for instance, or Tony Elliott, the core offensive coordinator at Clemson. You know, those guys, they haven't been a head coach. That's SC can't do that. They've got to find somebody who has been a proven winner.
John, thanks so much. Always a pleasure to have you
You're
on the show.
Best,
we appreciate
bro.
It.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, Pac-12 Hotline. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline, Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit CoulterNissan.com. And he's not wrong about getting
Love
a safety against Colorado might being enough to win.
John
that offense is awful.
Wilner.
Yeah, coming up next, Sarah Cazell helps us get you caught up with the Rush Hour reboot. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. That's American-owned and American dream. Brooklyn Betting.
Take it away, Sarah Cazell.
Okay, Rush Hour Reboot every day around this time on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Let's get right into it. It was an electric game for Kyler Murray on Sunday for the Cards. And yesterday on ESPN, Stephen A. Smith, he was asked, who would you rather have as your quarterback today, Russell Wilson or Kyler Murray? And Stephen A. said Kyler.
In terms of running with the football, there's nobody better than him other than Lamar Jackson. Now, Russell Wilson can move the chains, and Russell Wilson can extend plays, but the threat that Kyler Murray is at running the football, he's got weapons, but he himself is a very, very lethal weapon.
What's your reaction to Stephen A. taking Kyler over Russell Wilson?
I tend to actually agree with him. If you are going to pick a player based on what is coming, not what has been, I think you would bet on Kyler Murray's maturity continuing. So I am not all that surprised by it. I happen to agree with it now. There have been plenty of moments along this journey when I have wondered whether Kyler Murray was going to break through. And I think there are still questions, but what he's shown so far has been pretty tremendous.
My reaction is shiny objects syndrome.
Mm. Yeah.
And his rationale about running the football his escapability has been on display in the first two games, not necessarily production and running the ball.
Sure.
Here's the list of quarterbacks through 2 weeks who have more rushing yards than Kyler Murray. Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Daniel Jones, Josh Allen, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff.
And shut up, Jared!
Jameis Winston and Tyrod Taylor all have more rushing yards than Kyler Murray.
Okay, and I'm perfectly fine with that.
But if you're going to use that as your rationale, Steve, like running the football, that's not why.
Okay.
I'm just calling him
okay.
out.
All right.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough. But I do...
He does have two rushing touchdowns, though.
He does have that.
Yes. I think there's some validity to what you're saying, Dan, about the physical has always been there with Kyler, but now you're seeing the mental develop as well.
Right.
So that's
exactly
does
right.
give you
he
more confidence.
He sees all.
Oh, yes.
Baby Yoda.
Yeah, exactly. All right, now shifting the focus to Rondale Moore. Yesterday on Wolf and Luke, they were talking to Cliff Kingsbury, and they asked if the receiver could be the rookie of the year. Here is Cliff's answer.
We're a long way to go from that, but he definitely is a talented young player who's ascending, and it's what we saw training camp. He's worked really hard at it. He's studied really hard since he got here with us, and it's good to see that paying off for him. He's got to stay healthy and keep doing his deal, but he's been a weapon so far.
With all of the marquee rookie quarterbacks who already have big roles in the league right now, do you think Rondale Moore has any kind of shot at all, or is this a reach?
I agree. The rookie quarterback class has not been tremendous so far, but they're going to have a lot more opportunities still. Right now, even though Mac Jones didn't throw a touchdown pass, the fact that he's the starting quarterback for a competent football team, I think just gives him the inner track there.
Sure.
Wide receivers still dependent on somebody to get them the ball, and it's a deep receiving core, as we pointed out. So I would say reach right now.
Anyone you guys
are
keeping
an receiver,
eye on?
Even there's other rookie receivers that are even doing pretty well.
Yeah. Anyone you guys are keeping an eye on, or is that just, it's too early in the season?
Yeah, it's way too early.
Okay.
I just don't think Rondale Moore is going to, now, if he starts housing kick returns, maybe. I just don't think there's going to be a ton of those gigantic games for him. I think he's going to contribute in bursts and in plays and stuff like that. I don't think the aggregate's going to be, because you got Hopkins and other guys, I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's fair. Vince, were you going to add something?
I was going to say, going into the season, I was very bullish on Najee Harris, who's done some good things, but he's only averaging 3.2 yards a carry so far for Pittsburgh, so I haven't studied it too much, but I do believe quarterbacks have an unfair advantage in that
sure.
category.
Yeah. All right, moving to college football. Final question of the Rush Hour Reboot. We had Herm Edwards on yesterday, and of course he talked about his team's discipline issues and how they continue to shoot themselves in the foot 3 weeks into the season.
I had a good meeting with the team captains yesterday and said, look, we got to stop this, self-destructing ourselves. We just got to play smart. I don't worry about these guys playing hard. are playing physical. They're going to do that. They're always going to give effort. They're going to leave everything they have on the grass. But the fouls that we pick up in a game are way too many.
Okay. We briefly touched on this at the top of yesterday's show. Didn't really get to get into it. Which loss on Saturday was more embarrassing? ASU losing to BYU, both ranked teams, or U of A losing to NAU? What's worse?
It's tough for me. The U of A loss is embarrassing because they lost to NAU, and it's the little brother in their own state.
Yes.
But they're at ground, they're on ground level of a rebuilding project. The way
ground level,
it's below
subterranean.
Yeah. ASU
molten
was, they lost to a ranked team, but it was an embarrassing performance.
That's the key,
and I can't get past that.
To me, on paper, if you were looking on paper and said, okay, Arizona State loses to BYU and NAU beats Arizona. Arizona losing to NAU on paper is by far more embarrassing. But when you look at ASU and this team and what this team's ceiling was supposed to be and the fact that they could have had 20 penalties in a game with all of that experience on offense, that's what's embarrassing.
They should both be embarrassed. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And again, consider yourself
rebooted!
It's time for this week's Character Counts, brought to you by Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. Phoenix Suns guard Chris Paul is helping underrepresented businesses and entrepreneurs through his partnership with GoPuff, a service that delivers a variety of goods. Partnership is targeted toward giving underrepresented entrepreneurs resources to help grow their business.
Nice.
Participants take part in monthly workshops throughout the six-month experience. Eight businesses, ranging from a toys and games company specializing in card games to a company offering all-natural vegan care products, were selected to take part in the first group. And CP3 will serve as an ambassador, helping participants throughout their time in the program. He also helped choose the first cohort of participating businesses. Paul said in a release, "I've always had a strong passion for supporting entrepreneurs and bringing healthier foods and products to underserved communities. Sharing in this mission and collaborating with GoPuff takes this work to the next level." There you go.
Well
Chris
done,
Paul.
CP3.
Well done,
CP3.
And if you know a local high school student that shows great character, go to charactercountsaz.com and enter them to win a $10,000 scholarship courtesy of Parker & Sons. Coming up next, all NFC West teams that don't have a loss, please step forward. Wait, not so fast, Seattle Seahawks. We'll get into the week in the division next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
There are seven undefeated teams remaining only through 2 weeks of the NFL season, Bick. Three of them are in the NFC West.
Wow.
Los Angeles Rams, San Francisco 49ers, Arizona Cardinals still with a zero in the loss column. Seattle suffered a loss, the first loss in the division, as they fell to Tennessee at home in overtime, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. A, that it was in Seattle, tough place to play.
Oh, yeah.
And B, I mean, coming off of the beatdown the Cardinals handed the Titans, it looked like a much different, more focused, prepared Tennessee team that relied on what their DNA is offensively to get that win. It was a convincing win for the Cardinals, but I think it also served as a wake up call for the Titans.
This so far could not be working out better for the Cardinals. And by that I mean this. We know that they've got four excellent teams in the NFC, and logic tells you that all four teams could have good seasons and not everyone's going to make the playoffs. So one of these really good teams in the NFC, if not two, are not going to make the postseason. All right, so to avoid that, you need to get out of fourth place, and that's where a lot of people, myself included for a while, had the Cardinals slotted. So the Cardinals go to Tennessee just by based on schedule, and we all thought, oh, rough break for this young, inexperienced defense having to go play a team that might be an AFC contender with Derrick Henry. And we did interview after interview of people who are like, oh, man, trying to tackle that guy. It's like, trying to get your arms around a freight train. All right, the Cardinals go in, and through nothing they did, they caught a team totally unawares. They caught a team that just was not taking the Cardinals seriously, that did not expect to get punched in the mouth the way the Cardinals did. Ryan Tannehill even admitted it afterwards. There was two things that were shocking about that game. T- Taylor Lewan complimenting and thanking Chandler Jones for kicking his backside, and then Ryan Tannehill coming out and admitting in week one a team punched us in the face. All right, that team goes to Seattle.
And Tannehill should know he's got a punchable face.
He certainly does. And so that team now, that team is carrying that taste in its mouth up to Seattle, where they played resolute football, they didn't get away from Derrick Henry, and they won that game the way that they win football games. Okay, Cardinals get a real tough game from Minnesota, a team that played way above its head, at least in my opinion, given its injury factors, okay? Mm-hmm. And we're in a position where they feel like we blew that football game. We were up 20-7, we let that get away, and we had a chance to win it at the end, and we let that get away. And so now that football team is going back home, and now that football team is playing Seattle.
Yeah.
There's a chance the Seahawks are going to get dinged twice in the span of 2 weeks here.
The Vikings have that on back-to-back weeks, too. They should have beat Cincinnati, and they blew it at the end of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're really
Cincinnati let them back in. Yeah. Yeah. That's the way I view that game. That was a really, really questionable coaching decision, and that let the Vikings back in. But that is interesting.
It is.
The Vikings were desperate going into week two. They're going to be ultra desperate at home in week three.
Without a doubt. So the Seahawks are going to have to deal with that now. So if the Seahawks get dinged, that is going to be, they're going to be in a hole.
But look at it this way, too. The Cardinals, I mean, we agree, they're the much better team than the Jacksonville Jaguars. You play the game for a reason, but they're going to be heavy favorites. They already are heavy favorites this week. The Seahawks already have a loss. The other two undefeated teams, San Francisco and the Rams, have ridiculously tough games in week three.
Mm-hmm.
San Francisco is at home in the Sunday night game hosting the Packers, who got their stuff together last night. And the Rams are hosting Tampa Bay. And yesterday, we're in the studio during a commercial break, and NFL highlights are on, and they're showing Tom Brady throw 5 touchdown passes.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned to you, and I said, Tampa Bay's not losing, are they?
See, we're...
And Tom Brady, I mean, they've dismantled two opponents so far, and he comes out, and he's got 9 touchdown passes through 2 games, and he says, oh, we can get better.
Yeah, and now they're actually now courting Richard Sherman to join them as well.
Why not?
Why not?
He's got Pro Bowls on his in his past. Why do you fit in?
Okay, listen, I hear what you're saying, but Tampa's defense has been gashed so far. They've given up a lot of passing yardage. So we'll see what happens with them. You brought up something I think that's really paramount to everything here, and I think it's the idea that, okay, the Cardinals are getting even more national love this week than they did last week. How did they handle it against the Vikings? That's to be debated. They didn't necessarily start well against the Vikings. You know? Mm-hmm. A lot more penalties and timeout penalty.
Mm-hmm. They're down 2 scores.
Down 2 scores. And that tip play to Max Williams, as we talked about yesterday, it's really easy in retrospect to look back and go, yeah, 30-plus points on the Vikings. We're rolling. That game was spinning out of control in the wrong direction for the Cardinals, and through some fortuitous breaks, the deflected pass to Max Williams, Corey Peters stuffing Dalvin Cook on 3rd and 1 when nobody had stopped him all day, Kyler Murray the scramble to Rondale Moore on the very next play, boom, it's a new game. So you got this game in Jacksonville where you got to win this, you should win this, you're better than them, they've got a rookie quarterback and a rookie NFL head coach. They're not expecting anything. They're going to have a passive, apathetic crowd. The Cardinals have to go in there with their hair on fire. And this is what tripped them up last year. Detroit, Carolina.
Yep.
Yeah, but both of those teams are probably better than what Jacksonville is right now.
But also, the NFC West wasn't as good as it is. I mean, it was good last year, but it wasn't as good as it is this year, last year. So the Cardinals have even less room to... Like, would you? I know they're both 2-0. Are the Niners and the Rams as good as you thought they'd be so far? Have you been impressed?
Yeah, I have.
I've been impressed by the 49ers defense. I've been impressed by Matthew Stafford. The Rams defense
Cooper
Kupp's been nuts. But so that's going to be interesting to see and having to deal with that offense. The Rams defense, they got worked a bit in Indianapolis at times. Won the game, but they got worked a bit. I don't know where this whole thing is going, but I like the way it's trending for the Cardinals.
The 49ers, more injuries. Not as bad as last year.
By the way,
every week it feels like.
But it's now at the same position. They've gone through like seven running backs already. Mm-hmm. They're the Baltimore Ravens of the NFC.
It's a good point.
Speaking of the Cardinals' next opponent, the Jacksonville Jaguars, this was on social media yesterday, and actually on Sunday, and it garnered a reaction. There's a graphic with a bunch of the Jaguars players locked in arms at the bottom of it, and then there's a quote from Urban Meyer that says, "Hang in there with us. We're going to get better. The one thing about Jacksonville and the 904, go to sleep knowing there's not going to be any group working harder to get this thing flipped," attributed to Urban Meyer. The Atlanta Falcons, who are off to a woeful start under their first-year head coach, Arthur Smith. Very similar type graphic on social media. With a quote from Arthur Smith, "You don't want to be in the spot where we are. That's a reality, but we have 15 more to go. We have to put ourselves in a spot to go to win a football game." And some people noticed the similarities between these two posts of really bad football teams,
mm-hmm.
including the Jacksonville Jaguars social media team.
Oh, no.
That quote tweeted the Falcons quote and said, quote, "Hey, can I copy your homework? Yeah, fam, just switch it up a bit." Wow. So they're actually like getting in a war over the concept.
Trying to manage their bad start better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over that's our PR campaign.
That's what you're worried about?
Over generic social media posts.
Wow.
The Cardinals also did it, but they had a positive one from Buda Baker. I thought that was pretty funny. The Cardinals social media team does a really good
job. Yeah, they do. That is true. I'm with that.
I did sample. I didn't do it in week one, but I did sample the Eli and Peyton offering.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. It's different.
And different.
If you want commentary and description on what's happening on plays, it's not for you. But if you want to be entertained, and I watched in the fourth quarter when the game was pretty much decided.
Yeah.
It's a really good concept.
There's a lot of brave new frontiers coming to football. Do you see the Panthers, that gigantic graphic, the
mixed reality Panther?
The mixed reality Panther where you're sitting there watching it and you're in the state, you don't know what's real and what's not. And that went over incredibly well. I read an interview with the guy who owns that company that produced that. They said the sky is the limit with what we're going to do with this stuff and what we're going to bring.
I honestly was creeped out by it.
Were you?
Yeah. And I think it was Tim Ring who tweeted out that he got the Ghostbuster vibes. Remember the scene
all
right, who brought the dog?
That's right. So there's that. Then there's this idea of breaking away from conventional football broadcasts, because keep in mind, most of these national broadcast teams, it is cookie cutter, homogenous comment. It's not even commentary. They don't say anything.
That's a bet. Wouldn't you rather have that, though, than a very annoying commentator or someone who you absolutely notice and complain about the next thing?
They're finally doing it right, and ESPN/ABC and Disney, they tried to do it years ago, and they put Dennis Miller in the Monday night booth, but there was no alternative option. So that got panned, and people didn't want comedy and obscure references in their Monday Night Football.
Tony Kornheiser,
now,
too.
If they had that as like the B channel, like they're doing with Eli and Peyton, and you give options, I think the sky's the limit. They're finally doing it the right way.
Yeah, it's not going to replace the regular broadcast, but now it's going to become an option. You're going to see it more and more, I think, the alternate broadcast.
Yeah, no, and I think what's going to happen is, people, when I first experienced the Manning brothers doing that, there was part of me reflexively that wanted traditional commentary after a while. So when the humor doesn't work, you get aggravated as a football fan.
Yeah.
Or when you're talking over a key situation when you want the traditional.
I found myself in that situation, Vince, last night, because I was watching the Manning cast too. And there was one moment, I don't even remember what it was, but there was something where I was like, wait, what just happened? But of course, the Manning brothers aren't talking about it. They're interviewing Brett Favre. So I'm like, oh, well,
yeah.
There's use for both.
Yeah,
there is.
There's good space for both.
Good to have options.
Yeah.
Coming up next, through 2 weeks, he's probably the most talked about player in the NFL. Bick's got more on Kyler Murray in the blast next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.